From the point that Moses returned to Egypt, after encountering Yahweh God at the burning bush, he was sent as a messenger to Pharaoh and a spokesman for the people of Israel. He ran into nothing but rough sailing, rocky waters with these people of Israel. They were grumblers. They were accusers. The defining characteristic of their life was an unruly group of people. They were difficult. They were mistreated for 430 years as slaves. That maybe goes in their column as saying they have a reason why. They had fear ingrained in them by the Egyptians to keep that group of people, 2 million people, in line. They were physically abused. We know that they were beaten. They were whipped. They were emotionally scarred. They were dysfunctional people. They were starting their nation. Up to that point, they really were just a people. They were starting their national identity at the lowest point possible. If you think about the Revolutionary War and how we fought off the British and didn't, we came off on a victory. We're like, okay, we won. Now we're going forward. Israel started low. But this was not news to the Lord. He knew it. It was all in his hands, all in his plan. You see, everything that Moses conveyed to them as word of the Lord had come true. The 9 plagues that led up to Passover, the angel of death coming and taking the firstborn of Egypt, of both human and animal. It broke down the will of their captors so that Pharaoh said, get out. He didn't just release them. He commanded them, I don't want you here anymore. Get out. Leave. Scram. So they left. They were released from bondage for the first time in their lives. So they go and they follow Moses in the pillar of cloud and fire, and they wander around the desert a little bit, and here comes Pharaoh again. And they're freaking out. They're panicking. They say crazy things to Moses, and yet they experienced amazing deliverance. They saw the Red Sea. And again, in case of miracles, open up like 2 walls of water, and they march through, not in muck. Joni and I know muck. They walked right through dry ground. And when the Egyptian army came in, the waves crashed down upon them, and they were free finally. Martin Luther King spoke, free at last. That's what Israel was. They were free at last. And you would think it would be a time of rejoicing, of happiness. Not so, as we've seen. Their brokenness as a time of slaves created a wall of suspicion, of distrust. They didn't trust anyone. They lashed out each time life became difficult. And we have to watch out that we don't mirror those same attitudes. See, even though the Lord had rescued them every time that they had been tested, they came to Marah and the water was bitter. And he told Moses to throw a stick in there. And it changed. Was it the stick? And we said, no, it was just a visible sign that God was acting, and it turned fresh. He led them from there to the oasis at Elim, where there were 12 springs, one for each tribe, and there were 70 palm trees. And they were given a time to refresh, to recuperate, to just enjoy life for a bit. And then they headed in the desert. They headed south down towards things were going to happen at Sinai. We're a couple chapters out from that. And when they got out there in the desert, they grumbled again to Moses. Their bellies were empty. And they made the most ridiculous claims. They said, well, back when we were in Egypt, we sat around pots of meat and filled. Yeah, right, and the Egyptians were your servants, right? No, they were crying out for 400 years on the bondage and the mistreatment that they had. And the minute things got bad, they turned away from God and turned right back to where they came from, making slavery sound like it was better than trusting God and following Moses. Following them to eventually to a country that would be their own. Now, you know, Yahweh could have been angry with them for their continued bad attitudes, their stubbornness, their defiant behavior. But what did he do instead? He blessed them. He brought quail in the evening so their hungry bellies had meat, healthy meat. In the morning, there was a special bread on the ground. It appeared with the dew, literal bread from heaven. It was given freely. They didn't have to pay for it. They just went out their door, their tents, and picked it up off the ground. Can you imagine that? That would save your grocery bill, wouldn't it? To be able to walk out and just have God provide the things right outside your door. Now, some of us have hunted in our backyards, and so maybe that's happened a little bit. We had to put a little effort into it. But the reason for these tests was to give them an opportunity to prove their ability. That was something that a scholar said last week that really stuck in my head. The test was not to get you to fail. It was not like, well, if you can jump a 2-foot barrier, we're going to make it 3-foot. What it was doing is saying, you can learn and grow and expand. It was a way for God to stretch them. When I started in the martial arts, the very first thing we did was stretching so that you could kick and you could kick higher. But the trouble is that Israel was inflexible. They were rigid. They didn't want to. They wanted things their way. Does this sound like anybody you want to know? All right. It sounds like 2-year-old. Jesse, you just got out of that. And you're kind of in the middle of it. And Tanner's starting to get human now. But 2-year-old, mine. And that's what Israel was like. Demanding, rebellious, rather than thankful and humble. And this gives a question. Would they grow out of this pattern, this cycle of life of continually complaining and threatening the life of Moses, their leader, getting at a low point and God pulls them out? And we're going to see the answer is, unfortunately, no, they're not. They're going to stay there. Let's see what happens next in Exodus chapter 16. We're going to finish up Exodus 16, which is verses 19 through 36. We're going to do it in 3 parts again today. There's nothing magic about 3 parts. It's just, it seems like they divide up easily that well. And so the first part is Exodus 16, verses 19 through 26, which I subtitle, Disobedient Children Learn Sabbath Rest, Part 1, verses 19 through 26. Remember, they had just discovered the bread of heaven on the ground in verse 19. Moses said to them, no one is to keep any of it until morning. However, notice a couple of key words in here. However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it until morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Each morning, everyone gathered as much as they needed. And when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, 2 omers for each person. And the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it till morning. So they saved it until morning as Moses commanded, and it did not stink or get maggots in it. Eat it today, Moses said, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you are to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. In verses 19 through 20, provision of their daily bread was designed for Israel to learn trust and thankfulness to the Lord. It says, Moses said to them, no one's keep any of it till morning. There's a transition here. However, there's always that connector. However, some of them paid no attention to Moses. They kept part of it until morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Moses instructed them through the Lord to take only what they needed. You know, the trouble with our credit card society, we cannot operate within our budget because of what we need. It's what we want. You know, what it says is that in credit, and you're in banking, Kathy, you see this all the time. People get in trouble because they say, hey, you always pay it off later. Or if you keep it long enough, the debt credit counseling, they'll write it off. They'll do pennies on a dollar. And, you know, and they don't tell you what bankruptcy and stuff does to you. It's what they needed, God provided. They were told not to hoard it. He says, no one is to keep any until morning. Yet there's always some who try to cut corners, right? The laws that we have are based on the people who won't follow laws. True? What happens is that, you know, they did that in school. As things progressed, and it was, at first there was no cell phones, which was a glorious day. Anne never thought when that happened. She was probably in school when cell phones were really come out. And then we banned them. You had to keep them out of the building when they came in. And parents said, oh, you got to have them. And then all of a sudden they were there, and then we're fighting them, and kids are doing them. You hear them dropping them and playing games, and you've got all these issues going on because people are trying. So we made school rules that dealt with cell phones and their proper use and those kind of things. Same thing going on here. They paid no attention to Moses. This personal brokenness of being a slave left some of them morally bankrupt. They had nothing in their account. So Moses made sure they learned a valuable lesson one way or the other. Through the Lord, it says this wonderful gift that we read Psalm 78 last week, and it described this bread as the grain of heaven, the food of angels, the bread of angels. It would putrefy if it was left overnight, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. There's no advantage in this. If you take it and try to keep it, if you try to hoard it, it's going to go bad anyway. You know, and I don't even have to describe summer trash with maggots, right? There is nothing grosser on earth. You go, oh, you know, the smell and whatever, and you just want to, oh, and you go wash your hands, and it's gross. That was the results of doing this. And this angered Moses because they were disobedient. Why? He was trying to raise the bar. He was trying to say, come on, God is working in your life. God is blessing you. Let's get on the board here. These Hebrew people, he wanted to turn them from surly grumblers to God-honoring nation. Why? Because way back in Abraham, he said, all nations will be blessed through you. God wanted Israel to be the shining light of his grace and glory that would affect the world. The question was, would they live up to it? Ever? Verses 21 through 26. The Lord established a weekly rhythm of life now. They went from living day by day, now it was a week period. This is the structure of their week. Each morning, everyone gathers as much as they needed. And when the sun grew hot, it melted away. So if they didn't get what they needed, it was gone. It didn't stick around. It didn't sit out there and get maggots and stink around. It melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. Two omers. Remember, an omer is about 2 quarts of modern life. You know, I think of when Joni cans tomatoes. And 2 of those quart jars are what they would take. That would be a daily amount of 1 omer, so they would get 4 of those. And the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. They said, Moses, on the sixth day, take it twice as much. They're violating it. Moses says, hold on. He says, this is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest. A holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it till morning. It's okay. The sixth day is different. So they saved it until morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink or get maggots. It's different. He said, then eat it today, because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any on the ground. 6 days you're to gather it, but on the seventh day there will not be any. This pattern was designed at creation. Back in Genesis 1, it says on day 1, God created. Day 2, God created. Day 3, 4, 5, 6. He 6 days created mankind, and on the seventh day, he rested. Is it because Almighty God was tired? No, he spoke it into being. And Hebrews chapter 1 says that Jesus formed the universe. Why did he do that? Because it was a pattern for us. Work 6, take 1 off. This heavenly bread would melt if left out in the heat of the sun on days 1 through 5, not so that they would go out and take it, but an extra portion was required on day 6 to be prepared in advance. They said you can bake it or you can boil it. So they took it and they did something with it. By processing it that one day, it would work and it would save it over so it would be good the second day. The results of following Yahweh's mandate was that so they saved it until morning, and it did not stink or did not get maggots. Israel, learn your lesson. Now, if you try that on day 1, doesn't work. You get to day 5, doesn't work. You get to day 6, and it works. Huh, what's going on here? Now, then Moses shares the big picture here. He's backing up, and he says, this is the panoramic view. This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. You've heard that term. I hope when you leave today, you understand it better. The ancient Hebrew word for seven is Shabbat. The Hebrew word for rest is Shabbath. You're going, wow, those are kind of similar. The root of this is Sabbath, or as the Jewish people call it, Shabbat. It's based on a composite of these two terms, seven and rest, together. Sabbath is Shabbat, and Shabbat together makes Sabbath or Shabbat. Okay, does that make sort of sense? What happens is it's a composite word. And back in the early days of the Hebrew people coming out of Egypt, the Egyptians had hieroglyphs. You knew, you've seen those symbols, and then they started out as concepts, and then they become like letters. Well, it's the same thing here. And so what you have up here, the first letter is Shin, which means stop. So the first letter up here that would look like our letter N is Shin. Means stop, desist. The second letter right here is Beth, which means house or home. Beth El. El is God. Beth El was the house of God. Beth means home. And the third letter right here is Tav, which means covenant. So when you put these together, what it means is that the covenant obedience of the home of Israel will bring blessing in the reign of God's righteousness in place of worldly wickedness. That's what that means. That's what Shabbat means. Let me read that again. It's a compound concept. Covenant obedience, following that relationship obedience in connection with God, that relationship in the homes of Israel. Notice that church and faith starts in the home. It's expanded in the home. It will bring blessing in the reign of God's righteousness in place of strife. When I pray for marriages, when marriage goes south, it's typically because they lost their focus with God. When I take and do premarital counseling, I show them a triangle. And I said, the groom is in one corner and the bride is in the other corner, and God is at the top. And the closer they get, and it's saying that when you have God in your house and you follow his ways, your life is going to be better all the way around. Because today is the Sabbath, Moses says. It's a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of the bread on the ground. 6 days you can gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there won't be any. Do your work on days 1 through 6. Gather more so you can enjoy day 7. There's going to be nothing there on Shabbat. It should be pretty self-explanatory. But if you take your Bibles again, chapter 16, verses 27 through 30, which I entitle Disobedient Learned Sabbath Rest Part 2. Israel never learns it the first time. Verse 27, it starts out, nevertheless. 20 said, however. 27 says, nevertheless. Some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. God, through Moses, told him there isn't going to be any. So they go out of their tents and they look for it and they find none. Then the Lord said to Moses, How long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out. So the people rested on the seventh day. Nevertheless, some people went out and looked for the bread. And the Lord is getting frustrated. He says to Moses, how long will you, Israel, refuse to keep my commands and instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That's why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. You're to stay in on the seventh day, not to go out. There were always going to be some who were going to sneak out to see if there would be the bread out there, testing God, seeing if they could get ahead. Why bother to bake it when I can get it fresh? But they found none, just as God had told them through Moses. And this time, Yahweh is frustrated and angry with the people. He says, how long will you, Israel, refuse to keep my commands and instructions? Does this sound at all familiar? Back in chapter 15, verse 26, God had told them after Marah, he says, if you listen carefully to the Lord your God and do what is right in his eyes, if you pay attention to his commands and keep all of his decrees, remember that? He says, I will not bring on you any of the diseases I brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. How soon they forget, how soon we forget. When God does something good to us, it's like, what have you done for me lately? Come on, bring it on. When things get tough, let's have an attitude. I want you to notice two key words in this passage, given and gives. God says, I have given and I give. Sabbath is a gift. It's not another rule and regulation. When I grew up in a Baptist home, a fundamental Baptist church, back in the 60s and 70s, people looked at it as rules and regulations. You can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, you got to do that. Remember that? This was not what Sabbath was about. It was not about rules and regulations. It's a gift. The Lord created mankind in Genesis chapter 1. We do not have his strength. We do not have his endurance. We are limited in duration. We need time off to recharge. Let me say that again. We need time off to recharge. We cannot go 24/7, 365. What happens if we do? Frustration, aggression, discontent, anxiety, high blood pressure, suicide, depression. You ever hear those words in our society? I see former students of mine who talk about anxiety of their lives. Why? Because of stress. I read something on caffeine. I started getting headaches when I drank regular coffee. So I read about caffeine. And what they said is in our society and a lot of societies that are hooked on caffeine and energy drinks is that we get tired, naturally tired, and then we use that as a drug to boost us up. I saw a commercial yesterday where it had this guy, he said, snack, and all of a sudden the people in his office are tipping over and falling down, and someone says, what's happening? They said, well, it's a 3 o'clock burnout, you know? And so people in the office were falling over, so he eats his little energy snack, or you drink Red Bull, it gives you wings or whatever, and you think about all that. And the problem is that when you synthetically give yourself that boost, it doesn't allow you to rest. People talk about not sleeping well. Why? Because they pump themselves full of caffeine and then they go to bed and their minds are racing, right? Students who would come in, their heads down at 7:20 in the morning, I'd say, well, I was up texting or I was on my computer till 2 o'clock and I fell asleep and had a couple hours. Aiden, you know anything about that? You know, exactly. And what happens, you come in and you're not sharp. You do this over and over and over and over. And God says, you have to do Shabbat. You have to take one day off for your mental well-being. Is this making sense to you? You can't keep pushing and pushing and pushing. I knew a guy from another church who had a farm, and he couldn't make enough on the farm, so he got a job. So he worked on the job during the day, and he came home and he farmed at night, and he did this for about 5 years, and he started having problems with chest pains, and the doctor says, you're not having a heart attack, you are dying of stress. If you keep this up, you're gonna die in a couple years. And he was only in his 50s, and he had to give up the farm, and so he leased it out. You cannot keep going 24/7 over and over and over. The last section in Exodus 16, 31 through 36. The continuing importance of remembrance. The people of Israel called the bread manna. It was white like coriander seed and tasted like wafers made with honey. Moses said, this is what the Lord has commanded. Take an omer of manna and keep it for the generations to come so that they can see the bread I gave to eat in the wilderness when I brought you out of Egypt. So Moses said to Aaron, take a jar and put an omer of manna in it, then place it before the Lord to keep it for the generations to come. As the Lord commanded Moses, Aaron put the manna with the tablets of the covenant law so that it might be preserved. The Israelites ate manna 40 years until they came to a land that was settled. They ate manna until they reached the borders of Canaan. And then as a side note, verse 36, an omer is 1/10 of an ephah. All right, like that means something to us, right? But we know that an omer is 2 quarts. That kind of makes sense to us. Verses 31 and 32, the people of Israel called the bread manna. It was white like coriander seed. It tasted like wafers made with honey. So Moses said, this is what the Lord commanded. Take an omer of manna and keep it for the generations to come so they can see the bread that I gave you to eat in the wilderness when I brought you out of Egypt. This is the first time this heavenly bread has had a name, manna. I have purposely not referred to it as that, even though I knew what it was called and you knew what it was called, because we hadn't gotten there yet. Back in chapter 16, verse 15, the first time they came out of their tents and they saw it, they said, what is it? In Hebrew, that question, what is it, is manhu. Manhu, manna, what is it? That's how the name came about. They named it manna because they said, what is it? That's what it name stuck. That's what manna means. Is that cool or what? That's your fact to take home today. That's the original name for it. That's our question. A description for future generations. It was white. It wasn't made of coriander seed. It said it was white like coriander seed. And it tasted like honey wafer. You know what I think of this? I think of, you know, the boxes of those Nilla wafers, those little round cookies like that? I think of it like that. You know, not super sweet or shortbread. You know, you take and this is good stuff. You know, God provided them the best things, the food of heaven. And he commanded them to store some away for future generations because it says the people need to see it later on. Because we doubt, well, did God really do that? You know, there are scientists that say, well, that really wasn't a food. That was an insect secretion that it happens. Well, that only happens for about a month a year. And it happened every day for 40 years. Those were some really active insects, if that's what it was, right? It doesn't make any sense. It's like trying to explain away the Red Sea. It's like an attempt to define God in their boxes. In verses 33 through 35, so Moses told Aaron, take a jar and put an omer of manna in it, then place it before the Lord to keep it for the generations to come. So Aaron put the manna with the tablets of the covenant of law. What are those? Well, we kind of know what those are because we've read the book, but we're wading back right here because obviously Moses had gone back and predated this a little bit. And what did he put it in? Well, we'll get there. It said it might be preserved. The Israelites ate manna for 40 years until they came to a land called Canaan. He put a 2-quart jar away. Put the manna in the tap with the tablet of the covenant of the law that it might be preserved. In chapter 19, we're at the end of 16 now. 2 chapters from now, they're going to Sinai. And they're going to get the law. God himself gives 10 commandments. And those tablets went into this receptacle called the Ark of the Covenant. This was a historical record of Israel so that people could know inside of there was manna. It was real. Now, if you've seen Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Ark is somewhere in a government museum or in a storage facility. They have looked for that for centuries. They don't know where the Ark is. Inside of it is a container. It is also the tablets of the law. They were commanded, place it before the Lord to be kept for the generations to come. Just this Passover, they were told, do this again year after year. At this time of the year, you're going to commemorate Passover. Why? So you remember what the Lord did for you. In the same way here, they put parts of their history here to remember inside of that. And they learned real quickly, you don't go touching the Ark of the Covenant, right? We learn that later on. You don't touch this thing. But inside of there is a container with manna in it and the law because God, what he says, this is history, it's historical, it's fact, it's record. The key elements of their deliverance would be saved as a memorial. Manna would continue day after day after day for 40 years. That's a pretty long run. God is faithful all the way through. As we close this morning, as we reflect, We're going to see that Israel is going to develop a pretty high opinion of themselves, especially by the time of Jesus' day when the scribes and the Pharisees strutted around and said, look how good we are as God's chosen people. They experienced the blessing and the provision of Yahweh so many times. But we're beginning to notice here in the period of time that both Moses and God are starting to get frustrated with them because their patterns, their cycles are starting to wear. They're not such good people. When we take a look at it, what we're going to see is the only in and of themselves, they are no better than any nation on earth. As Christians, we need to remember we started at the same place. We need to remember what we were saved from. The same corrupt attitudes in our sinful nature. The same lack of thankfulness. The same disobedience prior to learning who God was, even though he was giving us blessings. It says, the sun shines on the just and the unjust. There's two verses right here that I want you to remember, what I want you to take home with you this week. Disobedience is characterized by the Apostle Paul in Colossians 3:8. He says, but now you must also rid yourselves of all such things as these, rage, anger, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. This is inside the Israelite heart. This is attitude inside the unregenerate person. It should not characterize Christians. That's on the other side is obedience and light. Colossians 3:17, just a little bit later, Paul says, and whatever you do, whether in word or in deed, what comes out of your mouth and whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. That is your contrast right there. One side is light. The other side is darkness. This is what this whole series is about. What characterizes you? That's what I want you to take and think about and challenge yourself. What characterizes you? And I'll close in prayer.